Welcome to Vox Vomitus, also known as Word Vomit.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest live episode of Vox Vomitus. I am your host, Jennifer Ann Gordon, the author of the Kindle Award-winning novel Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent, as well as Pretty Ugly and The Japanese Vox and Other Stories. Joining me today, as always, is my Vox Vomitus vixen, Allison Martine, author of The Bourbon Books, which includes Dibs Since September, Move on Melinda, and Climb the Salmon Ladder. Joining us today, and we are so excited about this, is Megan Collins, author of Thicker Than Water. Megan has been with us before. I think it's probably almost 2 years now, a year and a half.
It might even be three if it was Family Plot. But I think
it was Family Plot.
Almost 3 years then, which is crazy.
That is crazy. So yes, Megan was here before talking about the Family Plot. That book went on to win a bunch of Allison in His Eyes fake awards, the Voxies. So it won many of those, which is why I'm like, wait, we had you on a year ago. And I'm like, no, we've just been talking about the Family Plot now for three years.
It may have won an award that it shouldn't have been eligible, you know, like we still were like, we still think about this book a lot.
Thicker Than Water came out, I believe this summer, correct?
But yes, this past summer.
Crazy. And Allison and I have been dying to read this book, and finally we could not resist any longer and panic messaged Megan, said, you have to come on this week. We can't hold out anymore. So Megan, welcome back.
Yay, Megan.
Thank you so much.
I was so excited to get it. I got it on NetGalley and I'm like, okay, and I'll read it right before Megan comes on. And then it, like, the scheduling didn't work out. And then my computer died and I lost it off NetGalley because it's like, no, you've already accessed this. You cannot have it. And I'd read like two pages. And then I'm like, so I listened to it on my audio instead.
Oh, yay.
You got the Audible credit instead of the NetGalley, which I don't think does anything for you other than make you look cool.
Yeah. Either way, thank you both so much for having me. Thank you for reading. I loved hanging out with you guys last time, so I was super excited to do this again.
Awesome. Awesome. Megan, for people who are tuning in just now who might not know you, tell our viewers a little bit about yourself and then a little bit about your latest, Thicker Than Water. Why am I holding it like that?
So I am the author of four psychological thrillers. I have my fifth one coming out next year. And I tend to write about very like dysfunctional families who have dark secrets and lots of twists and turns that send them like in all crazy places, uncovering things about each other and themselves they never knew. And Thicker Than Water and the paperback, actually, which I'm holding, comes out on Tuesday, next Tuesday, a week from today.
Perfect timing.
Yes.
You're actually promoting something without even being aware of it. Good for us.
Yay.
<We did it. laughs>
So this one was the first time that I decided to not start with a premise of, oh, they're deeply dysfunctional. You can tell from page one, but instead to present a family who they think they're perfectly functional. And more than that, they think that they are like the shining stars of a family, like that they just have these great relationships and all that. And then I go in there and I'm like, oh, but look at all this other stuff that's underneath. And maybe things aren't as great as you think.
Yeah. Like, so, why are you still living in your family home? Why won't you change the hideous wallpaper?
Yeah, if you really think it looks like blood splotches, maybe this is the time for HGTV, you know? Yeah. Just change that.
Yeah. So Thicker Than Water is about two best friends and sisters-in-law who believe that they have this perfect, unbreakable bond until the man who connects them, which is the husband of one and the brother of the other, gets into a car accident and gets placed into a medically induced coma, during which time the police find evidence in his car that connects him to the brutal murder of his boss. And so his sister and his wife, these two sisters-in-law, are shocked, and they are like, this is impossible, he would never hurt anybody, and then like he doesn't even care enough about his boss to kill him, like what? so they're just like dumbfounded, and they decide, okay, well, the police aren't really cooperating with us, we're going to do our own investigation and dig into this and prove that he is innocent, so that by the time he gets out of this coma, he's not like immediately arrested. But then the more they look into different evidence and the more that things start to open up and secrets start to come out, the more they start to diverge on what they think, with one of them more sure than ever that the evidence means that he's innocent, with the other starting to think he might actually be guilty. And so it pits these two women against each other for the first time, when they have always believed that there is nothing that could tear them apart.
They're like this. I feel like your sisters are the female equivalent of Sam and Dean from Supernatural in terms of keeping secrets from each other for the other one's good. Like,
yeah.
Well, I couldn't tell them this, but talk to each other. But I can't let them know that. But mm-hmm. You could talk to them. No. So there was no scene in here where they were sitting on an Impala by a bridge, not talking to each other. But I felt like there could have been.
Yeah, I love that comparison. Yeah, and like the we're sort of keeping things from each other, but oh, like, look at this like incredible bond we have that nobody else has and that nobody better try to get in between and all that. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, I definitely loved their bond so much because I felt, and obviously I should feel like this as the reader, like they're your core couple
mm-hmm.
in this book. And I just love that so much. I love their inside jokes. I loved
Motatoes. I think I said it last night and everybody just looked at me. I'm like, Just eat your food. Don't.
I was going to try to like, I tried to find a post-it or something to stick on a coffee mug that just said like warm said potatoes. I wanted to do like a twofer, have it say warm potatoes on one side and then turn it over and have you see that it's my dog is on the other side. So it just been a good excuse to talk about Tubby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A bookstore that I did an event with, one of my launches got me a mug that had the book cover on it. And on the back, it said liquid potatoes. And
that's like, that terrible. That's because I don't want either of those liquid. Although I think, weren't they supposed to be tomatoes? And if they were, then maybe tomato soup.
But then potatoes can be but then, anything.
Yes, they,
it's everything. I brought
potatoes was a butchering of tomatoes, but then they turned everything you can eat into potatoes.
All food.
Yeah. I loved mm-hmm. the sweet and savory too. I was just oh my gosh, popcorn with chocolate syrup, mm-hmm. which is my potato.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's still a reference to it, although I remember my editor being grossed out by it and maybe I took it out, but there's a moment where they mention dessert pasta, which is something that I have always advocated for since college when I was like, pasta is just like, it's just a carb. Like we put chocolate sauce and ice cream and stuff on cake. Like, why wouldn't we put it on pasta? And so like one night I just got a little bowl of pasta and put a little ice cream on it and some chocolate sauce. And everybody was like, that's disgusting. And I was like, it's good to me.
I first go to like Elf where he's putting like all that because he was doing something like that. So I go to that's just absolutely nasty. And what are you doing mm-hmm. that for? But then again, I also remember there was a Save Roswell campaign from the original Roswell where mm-hmm. people were sending hot sauce because they put hot sauce in their ice cream. And that's like the reverse because you've mm-hmm. got this and then you're adding the not even salty, you're adding the burning your mouth off. But it's like, hey, you better to cool your palate. Mm-hmm. From the hot sauce than the ice cream you're eating it on.
You've got it all at once. Yeah.
It's all there. I don't think
I think it's kind of popular in certain places. I want to say Italy to put olive oil on vanilla ice cream or like gelato.
Okay, that's back to Starbucks has been doing that. And every time we see the sign for the oleato, we're like,
but it's a thing.
I can't.
To go back to Thicker Than Water, and this isn't really a spoiler, your editor or somebody said it was too gross to put ice cream on pasta, except there's a sewing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's why.
Like, there is a mouth sewn shot, and that wasn't too gross.
Yeah. Murder is fine, but don't be gross with food.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't think she told me to take out the dessert pasta thing. I think she was just like, ew.
Like, is this what you want to be known for, Megan? Right. Like, every time you go to a book launch, it's going to be pasta.
Dessert pasta. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't hate it. But no, I'll just be known instead as the woman who sews the men's lips shut, which when I did an event, when the hardcover came out, it was at a library and they had made cupcakes with little man faces that had their lips sewn shut. Which love was it. Creepy and delicious.
Creepy pasta.
No, and didn't am I imagining this, or didn't you have like PR material that was like a little sewing kit at one point?
That was at one of my, the woman who made me the liquid potatoes mug, she had made these little sewing kits to put at everybody's seat at the launch event. And it said like on the back, like warning, these should not be used for crime or something.
Not for crime. These are sewing needles for bot crime needles.
Yes.
It's totally fine. I was actually waiting for the backside of that mug that said more potatoes, instead of having cute little tubby on it, to actually just have his face or just like one needle. Oh, no. Not on tubby. No. I mean, like something referencing going funny and cute on one side. And then, oh, by the way, crime. Yeah.
That's awesome. So I want to talk to you because one of my favorite things in reading any book is getting to the acknowledgments or the afterword. As writers, we love to obviously get like a little glimpse into the process of every book. This was a struggle. Was it like, let's talk about, because you referenced Long Walks with Your Husband, where you talked to him about all of the plot things that didn't make sense and how you could get them to make sense. You talked about having to tear it completely down and start over.
Sew it back together. Well, yeah. I'll just say, I listened to the audio and I loved the audio, but that's one thing we don't usually get is any of the acknowledgments or anything about the author in it. And I was going to say, I'm like, I highly recommend the audio, but now I'm like, Jennifer, can you just take a picture of the acknowledgments and send it to me? Because I want to read them and I didn't get to.
Yeah, I do hate that about audio, that you don't get that, because I love to read it too. Yeah, Thicker Than Water is definitely the hardest I've ever worked on any book. It's had so many iterations from when I first thought of this idea and then pitched the idea. And then my editor was like, well, I like that, but
story kind of goes off the rails. So what was the original idea that you pitched?
Well, the thing is, it's always been this premise. The premise is the one thing that never changed. But then I turned in like a synopsis and my editor was like, bring it back to the premise and let's like replot. I'm like, okay. And then I did that and sold it off of that and then wrote it off of the synopsis that I'd sold it off of. And at that point, like,
do you normally work like that? Can you write off a synopsis?
Yeah. I need to know what happens or else I can't go anywhere.
Well, in a thriller, it makes sense because you need to be able to have all these things leading to who actually was behind stuff and how that happened and their motives and all that. Whereas what we do is not quite as needing to have those specific beats in there. And if you don't, you'd have to go back multiple times to weave them all in, which is another way to do it. But I feel like for thrillers, it does make sense to do that. But so the first synopsis though, wasn't the one that sold. It was the second synopsis.
And then I wrote the book based off the second synopsis. And when I finished it and when I turned it in, I did not feel good about it at all. Like, I mean, I always have a feeling like, yeah, you know, this needs a lot of work, but usually it's like, it needs a lot of work and it'll get there. But I was just like, I hate this book. I don't connect to it at all. But I still thought that like, well, my editor will tell me how to fix it. And she did, I guess, but her feedback was
it like, we need a completely different book.
Yes. She was like,
number three, let's keep trying on this. Okay.
She was basically like, okay, we're going to take it back to the studs. Keep this same premise, keep these same main characters, and then replot the whole thing. And I was really upset about it, not because I was so attached to the first thing, but I was just like, I hated writing this book the first time. And now I have to write it again.
If it's already a struggle.
Yeah.
And you go, I have to do it again.
I have to do
it again. Did you secretly rewrite the first book? You're like, what that synopsis you didn't like?
Yeah.
What do you like it now?
No. So I like, well, at first I cried for a while because I was just like,
yeah, you have to.
This was not
it's
what
part
I wanted.
Of the process.
And so I had 3 months where I could rewrite the book. And
so first month was tears.
Well, first few days were tears because I knew I needed to not waste any time. And so I talked to
3 months is not a long time.
Yeah. So I talked to some author friends and I talked to my husband, and like with those conversations, I was able to like figure out a new plot for it, ran that by my editor. She said, okay. So then I got to work like as fast as I could rewriting this book. And then by the end of it, I did like it so much more. And so it got to the point where once I then did revisions with my editor, I was really proud of it. So while it was like one of the most harrowing professional experiences of my life, it was worth it because now I can say I love the book, whereas before I was like, no, don't even let a bug read this.
Well, we're glad we're interviewing you after you like it again versus like, hey, you want to read this book? You're like, no, I really don't want
to. Like, no, I'm emotionally scarred by everything in this book. Please don't talk to me about it. Let's go back to the family plot or we will talk about my miniature collection or Taylor Swift.
Yep.
Taylor Swift's always valid.
All safe topics.
All great topics.
Well, but we're glad you got to that point, but it is interesting because the whole idea of writing from synopsis, it's something I'm kind of doing now, but I haven't gotten the editorial feedback yet. Mm-hmm. So I'm also kind of like, okay, do I keep doing this or will I be getting feedback? Because nobody wants to, like, they talk about how writing is rewriting, but nobody wants to go into something knowing they're going to rewrite it. Yeah. And I don't mean knowing it's going to need changes, but like knowing it's going to be stripped, like you said, down to the studs or even worse, down to the bare plot of land where it's like, yes, there are blank pages here. Fill them again. This time do it right. Nobody wants to do that. So I understand that whole feeling. So I'm glad we're interviewing you after the third time through.
Yeah.
But doing that whole idea of like, okay, but what do you think of this later on? And as far as the three versions, is the third version closer to version one, closer to version two, or is it a completely new animal / 4-year-old puppy?
It's because the premise, like I said, never changed, it's not a completely new animal, but so much did change in terms of the structure of the story, because in the one that I turned in and the way that I was writing it in the first couple of iterations, the finished version is dual point of view, first person, Julia, one of the sisters-in-law, one chapter, and then Sienna, the other, and then going back and forth. But the way that I had originally written it, it was third person, sort of omniscient point of view, so that the narrator could head hop into both Sienna and Julia's heads in the same scene. And I did that initially because I wanted to emphasize their closeness so that when the narrator or when the narrative says they, it would just keep saying they, like that they're always paired together instead of like Julia's doing this while I do this or whatever. So that's why I did that. But then in looking at it again and knowing that I had to replot the whole thing, I realized it was going to be a lot more effective to split the narrative between them, turn it into first person. And what that helped me do actually was helped me to hopefully achieve or be on the path to achieve at least one of my main goals for the book, which was that I wanted readers, when they're reading Julia's point of view about what she thinks happened with this murder, that they're like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Like that's gotta be it. And then when they're reading Sienna's point of view in the next chapter, they're like, or how it originally was, not broken up to chapters. Like they're like, oh yeah, Sienna's definitely right. So that they are flip-flopping back and forth. And so with having those perspectives actually split, that helps that be an option more concretely, I think. And so I was really happy that like, the changes like that came in that weren't just like, I'm changing this because my editor said to. It was like something that organically worked with my overall, my aim with the story.
Well, and I feel like it really helps a lot of times because we would know something that Sienna didn't know, or we would know something that Julia didn't know, and watching how they would then interpret something and going, why would they be doing this? And we're like, we know why they're doing that, but it really worked. And if you were head hopping or doing a they, you wouldn't have those cool, juicy moments where we're sitting there going, and you wouldn't, you would just lose that. Oh, and Diane wants to chime in. She said, Diane Zinna says, why is it not showing? I'm telling you to shout. There we go. I love that reasoning for first person dual narration. So smart. And we often don't see dual narration except for things like rom-coms. And I was joking beforehand that like, oh, when it was the very first iteration, it was a rom-com. And just kidding. Like it was never that different a book. Megan, you've never written rom-coms. Would you like to? Would you do this version of when Julia met Sienna?
You know, the book that comes out next year for me, the very first idea I ever had that was connected to this idea that became this was for like a romance story. But it's all these years later when I finally figured out what it was going to be, became a thriller. So I think I have that, like, I want to. I would love to. I love romances. I love rom-coms.
And you're really good at writing banter.
Oh, thank
and
you.
Relationships. Like you yeah, have that
banter
at the core.
Relationships.
Well, but that's like, probably romantic. Because I do read like a lot of romances and rom-coms. And that's why I always tell people, like, when everybody's looking for, like, young writers looking for writing advice, one of the things I always say is read as widely as you can. Like, don't just stick to the genre you write. If you're writing horror, you should be reading romances, because even in horror novels, there's relationships of some kind, and romances are the way to see like that as most like crystallized form, and
yeah. Where it's at the forefront of the story. So it's really right. emphasized. Whereas in these other genres, it's super important, but it isn't necessarily the narrative. So it isn't right. necessarily getting highlighted, like you said, or like crystallized right. form.
But it's usually the reason why characters are doing something. Nine times yeah. out of 10, they're doing it out of love.
Love.
Whether or love that's romantic, friendship, right. brothers, yeah. you
or,
know.
Or love that went wrong to grief yes. or betrayal or all sorts of things. And it's my excuse for making Jennifer read my books. I'm like, you need to read the romance. And she's like, please stop making it. But I need to do it. Makes her a better writer.
I love a love story. My problem with romance is literally just that I know it's going to have a happy ending. Mm.
You're like, but what if it didn't?
But what if it didn't?
What if there's suddenly a dead body? Which is my problem if I were to ever write romance, that they're just a dead body would show up.
I did try to write what I was going to consider a dystopian rom-com, and it very quickly turned into just like literary grief horror. And I'm like, oh no, it's not funny. And it's not a romance.
Was that what Pretty Ugly started as?
That's what Pretty Ugly started
That's Pretty Ugly. I'm like, I know what that one is. You did write that book, and it is not a rom-com. No,
not
like when but Jennifer writes her first sex scene, she's like, it is not supposed to be sexy. We're like, good, achieved. Definitely.
Achieved. That was not
very
sexy.
Uncomfortable to read. Good job. Yeah. So uncomfortable.
It's because I'm from New England. Megan can understand this.
We've got like gothic vibes all around us everywhere we look.
It's just infusing you. It also explains the sweater, because you're probably cold, whereas I'm like going,
yeah.
All right, assuming we don't have a more power outage, we had sunny weather, then random thunderstorm power outage, and then just back to sun. We're good. That was all the weather we got. It's all good. But I do love the idea of telling us to read outside our genres, because it does inform all of it. And I think it also keeps the writing within the genres from becoming stale, because I do love like that banter element, like Jennifer was saying, that's between there, that it's the love story between these sisters. And we are rooting for, will these sisters, who are not related by blood, but thicker than water, like, will these sisters survive whatever happens to the man that connects them? And that's what we're really invested in, more than did he do it? Did he not do it? Do we care? Okay, we do care, but maybe not as much about what happens to them afterwards.
Well, and even they say it, they think it.
Yes.
So it's like, why am I so invested in making sure this man is innocent? Because it would really suck if he wasn't, not only because I would lose my brother, lose my husband, but it would make things awkward with my best friend.
Yeah.
I care about her. Okay, him too. And yeah, he's in a coma. So that really would suck for him to wake up and then be like, by the way, here's some handcuffs. And I want to talk about the son for a while too, because like, I know that when I first started reading it and I was like, oh, and there's a teenage son, how's that going to play out for things? That the involvement of how this boy is, and watching how he had gone from being, you know, the little kid who's really affectionate to teenage soul and don't touch me, mom. And then watching them, like, are you gonna let him talk to you like that? I don't know what to do. He's a teenage boy. Expresses the terror, the existential terror parents have when their little cute cuddly thing goes to mom, I'm going to my friend's house. And you handle that so well. And
I'm
especially
glad I'm a dog mom.
Well, yeah, teenage dogs are not the same. Teenage dogs are geriatric, and you're just like, oh, are you okay? Here's some special kibble that's softer on your teeth. Versus, oh, you're those pants don't quite fit you because you just had another growth spurt. How tall are you gonna get, kid? Yikes. But yeah, his involvement and what he knew and what he was keeping. So there was like that. I was mentioning Sam and Dean. I don't want to say he's Castiel, because that just doesn't work. There's no sun involved here. Bad analogy, stopping the analogy train there. But knowing that he knew something else too, and that he was aware of something and what was he keeping. I loved how you wove that in, because he wasn't a central point of view. So we never knew what he knew until the characters did, really, too, because we're not like, and suddenly teenage boy. Yeah. I don't think anybody wants to write a teenage boy POV, which makes me sad, but very rarely read teenage POV in like thrillers, because you're like, we don't want to traumatize these kids more.
Because in a thriller, it has to be the right kind of unreliable narrator. And a teenager is an unreliable narrator just because they're not paying attention to actually what's going on in the world.
Yeah. And his shoes. Sorry, that's not a spoiler, but it's a little bit of a spoiler. But it's like the whole idea of like, mom, you weren't paying attention, but I was. It's like, mom, and I seriously have moments with my children, only one of which is technically a teenager, and she's just barely a teenager, and she's one of the least terrifying teenagers so far. And the kinds of things that she does, like, she is one of those kids who's super, super smart, but then makes the dumbest comments. We were changing the clocks after the time change, right? And we're in my husband's car, and I had to move something to get to it. And I changed the H for the hour. And that's all I had to do, because it was just an hour ahead. And she's like, are you going to change the month? She thought the M meant month. I'm like, what is wrong with you? Like, seriously. This kid is getting straight A's in high school math as a seventh grader, but she thought the M stood for month.
I'm going to blame that on iPhone somehow.
Yeah.
Doesn't even have one. Actually, she does now, because I gave her mine after the whole iWatch debacle thing. But yeah, you have a very realistic feeling boy there, where he's at that cusp of wanting to be with the other friends, as opposed to, and then, well, what are people saying about my dad, when now it's like, oh, he could be the, and they have some awful names for what this guy is, because the gruesomeness of the murder, which your editor had no problem with, even if she has problems with dessert pasta, is such that it's like, dude, this is a serial killer, even though there's just the one body. But they're like, dude, this is a serial, because nobody would just go that awful just for your garden variety. I needed to off this guy kind of murder.
Yeah. I kept hoping there was going to be a twist where there, like, another body showed up. But that's just me.
More bodies.
Make it worse, please.
I know. Like, I, a lot of times I would just like think, this is my, I mean, I do think it's my least dark book. But then I always go back to, on page two, it's talking about the guy being stabbed and smothered and his lips sewn together. So you do have, like, the murder itself is very dark.
You have this signature Megan Collins, you know.
You're like, you're not getting off easy this time. Yeah. But I love how you worked that in so that it was definitely something where it was plot related, not just Megan being gruesome for the sake of being gruesome, because they had to wrestle with the idea that not only is this man accused of murder, he's accused of a horrific murder. And then they're going, yeah, but he, if he did kill him, okay, there might be reasons that you might want to kill your boss, or there might be additional reasons he might want to kill his boss. But to do it in that kind of way is like, all right, like, I don't think my spouse would kill somebody, but to do something like that, it's like, that's not their style. That's not how they would do it. Come on.
Yeah, I definitely wanted one of the questions of the book to be like, why did it happen in this way? And like, if it was the husband, that's sort of an interesting thing. Like, how does it go from like, he barely rates in my life to doing this like three-pronged approach to killing him, basically? Or if it was somebody else, why that? But like you guys said before, I did want to write this one so that the central question, the central kind of mystery, it's not really a mystery, but the question that you're trying to find out is if this relationship is going to survive, rather than, and I, of course, I wanted the murder mystery itself to be interesting too, and to be fueling that question.
But the emotional drive in this is, are these two women going to be okay when all is said and done?
Yeah.
Because the boss is definitely dead. He's not.
Yeah, he's not okay.
Yeah. A lot of people, I think, are not okay in this book, but I wanted them to be okay. Like, I didn't care about anything else. Yeah.
Well, and so you have another one coming out. And where are you in the process with that? So is that one, please tell us you're not on like synopsis two and re-grocking all of that. I hope this one is.
I had to burn my
Yeah. No, face. I mean, I was so scared when I turned in the first draft, because I was like just traumatized from that with Thicker Than Water. But when I got my feedback I was like, okay, like this is going to be a lot of work, but this is manageable. A lot of work. This is a lot of work that you expect when you turn in a book. Mm-hmm. So I've been doing that. It's due at the end of the month, and then I'll turn that in, and hopefully it won't need a lot more after that, and just little things. And yeah, so I'm excited about that one. It's been night and day from writing Thicker Than Water to that one. Because I mean, every book has its moments or like days or weeks at a time that feel like a slog and it's just really hard work. But this next one, I was just like really excited by the idea, the things that I got to do in it. And so it was more fun on the whole.
Oh, good. Now, and you said this next book that you're working on right now is the one that originally started as like a rom-com idea.
Or romance. Yeah. You didn't actually romance. Say rom-com, yeah. But they're like, yeah, hey, only one bed and then someone dies in it.
Yeah. So it was like, I don't know, it was more than 10 years ago where the first spark of this thing came into my head, and I wrote like a few pages as something that would have been like a women's fiction romance type thing. But then, and I kept coming back to this idea, and it evolved over time, and then it became like, oh, this is how it would be a thriller idea. And then, but it was still like, there were things about it that I knew that I wanted to do that I didn't know how to do. And then I figured that out, or I figured out a way to do it. And so the premise of it is, and my editor, after she read the first draft, she said she's going to pitch it as, and I love this, I had not thought of this, but she's going to pitch it as if You've Got Mail had been written by Gillian Flynn, which I want to read that. And I'm like, oh, I wrote that. It's about,
I don't even know what happens.
It's about a woman who becomes romantically obsessed with the husband of her heart donor because she had a heart transplant. Even as rumors swirl that he might've had something to do with his wife's premature death. And she's definitely not supposed to know who the husband of her heart donor is because there's a lot of anonymity about that, but she knows and she's figured it out. And she's, I always describe her as she has a heart of gold. She's a really good person. She cares about people a lot, but she's a little unhinged. She's a lot unhinged. And part of her journey will be seeing how unhinged she goes or doesn't go.
I can relate this.
Oh wait, sorry. So. Go on. Well, and I think it's funny that you say heart of gold, but it's not even her heart.
Not even mm-hmm. her heart. But whose heart was it?
I know it was such a like. I needed to, obviously, the heart is a central image and I do keep coming back to it, but it was like,
I need to see the cover of this. It can be really gross.
I know. We haven't started talking cover yet, but I have ideas and I hope that they get executed. But I learned in my research about heart transplants that once you have a heart transplant and you have then what is called a denervated heart, if somebody were to scare you or pop out at you, like normally if it's your heart would start beating really fast. But if you have a denervated heart, that adrenaline spike is on a delay. And so your heart might start beating 10 minutes from now really fast once you've already calmed down, or 2 hours from now. Weird. And so that was super interesting.
Is this for any strong emotion or just specifically
fear? Yeah, like anything that would get your heart going. So that presented a really interesting and necessary writing challenge for me, because I think one of my crutches is anytime to convey that a character is like feeling anything a little more extreme than calm.
Their heart was heavy.
It's like the heart starts going, and I always have to cut those back. So this
can't
one, I was
just
like, well,
cut
I
them
can't.
And chase them 10 minutes later in the scene.
But then weird. I was like, well, I still have to signal in some way that she's affected by this. So how do I do that without the heart? So it forced me out of my comfort zones with that kind of thing.
Is the title just going to be denervated heart? Because I can barely say it, but I like it.
It's Cross My Heart, actually.
Ooh, that is a good
one. I like that
too.
That one sounds more like a heart versus like heart condition. Which is,
yeah.
Probably more my thing as far as weird titles, but yours are probably the ones people picking up. Like, yes. I love it.
So you said this idea started 10 years ago. Is that kind of how your brain works? Do you get an idea for years before and let it percolate, change? Or
no, this is really different. Like normally I'll get an idea usually I start getting an idea like while I'm at the tail end of working on the previous thing.
That's convenient. I like that.
Yeah. And I'll just like put it in a notes app and like, and I'll kind of like just let it marinate for a little bit. But then once it's time to start thinking of things, I go into them and I'm like, does this have legs? And can I make a full book out of this and go with that? But this one, yeah, it's just something that I've just kept returning to. And I kind of thought so many times like, oh, that would be a really cool idea, but I don't think I'm ever going to actually do it. And then what had happened was that I pitched a different idea to my editor this time, that I was really excited about. And, they rejected that. And, they, for a number of reasons, and were kind of like, but we still want to do another book with you. So what else do you got? And I'm like, oh, that is my thing that I have.
that
you just threw in the trash. So I started thinking back, like, what are other kind of stories that I've had on the back burner? And I thought of that one and I was like, what if I finally like sat down and figured out the things that I've been like, no, I have no way to figure that out. And so that's what I did. And
it made you figure it out.
Yeah. It was out of desperation. Like, okay, here's one that's been around for a while. Let's see what I can do with it. But then I ended up loving the concept and everything and being really excited to write it. Which I was happy about because I had been so sure that the one that they rejected was like the book of my heart, like the one that I had to write. Oh. And it was very much a like one of those things where it's like publishing is a business and the book of your heart is not the book of marketing's heart. So I was glad.
Allison and I have this conversation at great length, many times.
Three times a day. I was going to ask, so you bring up a lot of different things about how publishing works. And as far as like, well, they still want something from you, but not necessarily the thing you wanted to work on. Mm-hmm. And then what happens? So the other thing I'm assuming was just a premise or maybe a synopsis, not an entire book written. Right. So you haven't actually created that thing and go, well, now what I do with it.
Right.
But is it something where like they were saying, like, you don't have to get into this if you're like, I will not talk about it. That's fine. But was it something where it's like, it's not on trend right now, or it's not on brand, or it's not what's selling. So is it something that you could revisit with them down the line? Or was it, this is not what we want from you, full stop. So if you ever wanted to write it, you're like, okay, so now my pen name is, you know,
Kegan Mollins.
I was going to say, trying to flip your name around, but I'm like, Keegan isn't Keegan Michael Collins. No, that's not it. That's Keegan Michael K. But yeah, like, would you have to have a different persona to write that book? Or are they just saying, not this minute? Because we've had authors, especially ones who write historical fiction, where it's like certain time periods are very on trend right now. And they're like, we want you writing about this era. And they're like, but I want to write this. And then they part ways so that they can write. And it's not that the book wouldn't have been good. It's just, well, that's not what's selling right now. And that is that whole marketing thing. And it is the whole, what are people wanting right now? And it's basically them guessing based on what's selling now, what'll sell later. So they're trying to project these trends. Yeah. And it just becomes mental gymnastics that I don't know how anybody knows.
Yeah. So I have no problem talking about it because I can talk about it in a way that won't give anything away about it. But so the book that I had presented that I thought for sure was the book of my heart, I did write a synopsis. I wrote the first few chapters, and the main character was a teacher, and a high school teacher. I was a high school teacher for 12 years, so I was going to be able to bring in all the things that I loved about that and the things and like honor the things that brought me so much joy about that, but also write in a cathartic way all the things that brought me joy about that. But
this was Megan's therapy book for herself.
Yes. So it really was supposed to be. And the thing is that and this isn't a spoiler because it's very apparent from the first chapter. One of the bad people in the book is an adult staff member at the school, and who has like done bad things to people, some of the students. And that came from a real thing that happened when I was working at the school. And it was something that was silenced because there was no proof other than this person's very reliable word, I would say. Mm-hmm. And it's something that like has burrowed into me and become this like rage that like every time I think about it. And so the feedback that I got from my editor and my publisher was that people do not want to read a book where an adult at the school is the bad guy. And that it would make people too squeamish. And I am like, I get that to a certain extent, but I'm also like, they were like, it's too upsetting to have them be. And yeah, I was like, yes, I agree. It's very upsetting when the adult is the bad guy at the school and gets away with it. So that was the reason. So I don't know if things change. And I talked it over with my agent and she was like, I think given their feedback that other publishers are probably going to feel the same way. So even if you did write and the whole thing and take it out,
it's been tricky. I think, you know, just the past few years, especially there's a lot of different things that people right now are just like, I don't want to hear about the corrupt cops who do something terrible but at the same time, we do need to hear those stories.
Yeah. Exactly. It's but like, well, when is it the right time? Those aren't going to be an
airport book. Like,
right.
Like,
well, and
I'm going to Florida. I'm going to read this about like, the teacher that did something bad.
Well, and it's also really hard because it feels like there are certain characters that you're not allowed to accuse or have as your bad guys. And then other times it feels like, oh, hey, look, it's the, and then you fill in the blank of who we are allowed to make the baddies. And it's like, well, the reality is baddies work in, like, pretend baddies is a word, but villains and horrible people work in all sorts of professions. Mm-hmm. And we see them in places of power. And it also becomes, it almost becomes like, so this is not really a spoiler because the show's been out for years, but there was a show I watched where they, something bad happened to a small child. And one of the brief suspects, but then I'm like, he can't be it because of who played him, was a priest. And it's like, okay, well, it was actually nice to see that for once the priest didn't do it, because we almost were like, yeah, priests are always doing terrible things. And it's one of those things where it's like, are we assigning certain jobs as like, those are bad people, so you probably shouldn't do it. But I do understand why, as like a society, we don't want to, no one wants to read a book where it's like, oh, what's going to happen to my child? Like, it's that whole parent doesn't want to read something, where something bad can happen to their child at the hands of a teacher. So I get that. But at the same time, it's like, all right, well, then are just children off limits as who gets hurt? Because then that takes a whole lot of other books off the table too. So, I mean, I've read great books where lots of things happen to kids, and there are people who were in those trustworthy positions who were the ones, I mean, I won't name certain names, I'll mention it later, but award-winning books where that does happen, but it's like, okay, but it happened in this way, and so it's allowed to happen. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if there's certain rules or certain people who are allowed to tell the story. And
sometimes I think, too, if you, like, put it in the past, like, oh, way back then, the teachers could get away with things like that, but now... Mm-hmm.
That you're like, we don't want to hear about. Well, because if it's historical, then the idea is it passed and things like that don't happen.
They don't happen anymore.
And even though they do happen anymore, every more.
Yeah. That's and not then it's just up for the reader to be like, oh, it's actually quite timely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're like, no, it's done. Those bad things never happened again. Nope.
Yeah. Nope.
It's all good now.
I hope you someday, in a way that's very positive for you, I hope you can write that book.
Like, yeah, I hope so. I still like it when I think about it. I still like the catharsis that I think that it would be for me. And it was really hard because, like I said, so I was the one who was trusted by the individual then they told about this adult. So I knew this whole thing. And I was told by administration, like, I couldn't tell anybody. I couldn't warn other teachers. I did. but I technically wasn't allowed to.
You're not in California, but don't you guys have mandatory reporter law? My husband's a teacher.
That was mandatory.
Every year just to help at my kid's school. We are mandatory reporters.
It was mandatory reported, but when they came back and were like, there's not sufficient evidence to blah, 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 and this teacher's coming back or whatever, they're like, you can't tell anybody, you can't warn anybody or whatever. And so I felt like, you know, I was, even though I did warn some other teachers, because of course, but I was like, okay, I've been silenced in that. Then this book where in my way, I was going to be able to like talk about what happened and like get that person in that way. than to be like, to be like, no, this is something we can't talk about. It's too upsetting. And I understand, like, it's a completely different thing, what was happening there. And I don't blame my publisher for that, but it was definitely like, oh, it's happening all over again. So I do hope that at some point, like, people are willing to read those stories. I mean, I think it would have been like still a really fun, even though it was really dark, like there was a really fun element to it. So we'll see. Who knows?
Well, and my part of me says, I wish you had unlimited time, because none of us do. But if you had unlimited time, that you would write that book anyway.
Yeah.
Have that catharsis, even if it's not out yet. Put it aside. Megan's one of our youngest writers. She's only 12 and a half. So, which is interesting because she was teaching for 12 years. But to put it aside and then be like, when you're older, and then don't change anything, and then it's historical.
historical fiction novel about what was like a long time ago.
And you don't have to change anything, but it will be historical by then. Like, we had that issue where someone was writing about their own life, and they're like, this is historical romance. You're like, no, it isn't. I'm still alive. but it's that kind of thing. Like, just put it aside and do that. But I mean, I understand there are things like we want to explore, and if publishing's like, okay, but that's not what we want from you. And when you're under contract and you're like, we have right of first refusal, then they do that. And I guess I'm glad that they said no to a premise rather than an entire book.
Yeah. And I'm glad that they did say no to that, but we still want to see something else from you. And I honestly think like if I was independently wealthy, if I had some kind of trust fund or something, and my income was not an issue, I probably would have been like, because in that moment I was so in love with that story idea. I think I would have written it anyway. But because I need to eat and do
it's
those
nice
things,
to feed your dog.
Yeah. It's like, I'm not really just gonna then walk away from that on the chance that maybe another publisher will take it and have to write the book in the meantime. It all worked
but
out.
We're
because,
getting cross my heart out.
Yes, because I do really love that one. And that wouldn't have happened if that other one hadn't been rejected, which that's why I always like, I love that phrase that people say, that rejection is redirection. I think it's so true that, you know, you can't identify that in the moment. You can't, like, most of the time you're just reeling from the rejection and what that means and what you can't have. But once you kind of get past that moment, it always puts you in another place where then you get something that if you had gotten the thing you originally wanted, you wouldn't have gotten what you like maybe really needed in the end.
Well, especially if, as you said, like your normal thought process or your normal creation process has been new book comes at the tail of an old book. So this book that was one that had been kind of permeating in the background for a long time, it never would have come up to bat really because something else would have shown up. And, you know, who knows what the next book's going to be. And like I say, write the book and then it's historical fiction. So later when you're like, oh, you know, I just had surgery on my fake hip worn, you know, 40 years from now or 60 years from now, here's a book ready to go. I wrote it. Just publish it. No one, everybody involved will be mostly dead or retired. No one will remember.
That'll be my life plan.
Yeah, that'll be the retirement plan.
Mm-hmm. But I do like the rejection being redirection. But I know sometimes it does help when you're like, they're telling you they want something else, which is a better rejection than just, we hate everything you did.
Yeah. Like, good luck elsewhere.
Yes. We're not, just go away. Just go away.
Mm-hmm. Megan, you've been fantastic. Everybody who watched this live or is watching it on the replay, make sure you get Thicker Than Water out in paperback on Tuesday. I've got the hardcover. Yay. Thank you so much. If you're watching this on YouTube, hit subscribe.
Please.
And make sure you tune in 2 weeks when we have Sarah Langan here talking about her new book, A Better World. Which is
amazing. So good. I just got a copy in the mail the other day and I'm excited
it's
about
so
it.
So good.
I feel like we haven't had Sarah since we had Megan. So it's like we're kind of having
I know.
Bye.
Bye.